to say don't drop.
I was here in setting.
Pro Tem. Greetings, everybody. Why don't we go ahead? Excuse me, it's after six. Your acting chairperson would like to start this meeting. Okay. Welcome to the PLRT. Public Lands Roundtable.
Yes.
See how I handled that?
Keeping public lands in public hands.
And if you could please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, I would appreciate it.
Sure.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
For all.
My name is Charlie Happendorf, and apparently I'm the fall guy. George, for an update, I guess. We can go around the table and introduce ourselves real quick. But I guess George has probably left town along with Tom and whoever else has
the Exodus is on.
The Exodus is on, right? You know? So I'll go ahead and pass the torch off to Gary.
Come on, Gary.
Gary, Dr. Cabins.
Mary Grimsley, Gear Grinders.
Mark Mason, Quail Forever. John Auburn, California Breakfast Burritos.
Ruth Hidalgo, Recreational Rock County.
Stephen Rainey with the China Lake Astronomical Society and the TV Boosters.
Sam Easley, Transition Habitat Conservancy.
Jaime Lopez Walters, Pennsylvania.
Phil DeSons, BLM Ridgecrest.
I'm Danielle Schiller, and today I'm representing Public Land Matters.
Great.
Will Leacher, Red Mountain, represent the public.
Barbara Bain, Archaeology.
Libby Vincent, Matarengo Museum.
Sam Merck, I represent the public.
And behind me we have
Carol Dyer, Randsburg General Store.
Hey, Carol. Mm.
Brad Pitt.
Hiding that race car up there, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Great. Welcome to the meeting. And what are we doing? We've got the Welcome to Pledge of Allegiance communication topics. We know how we're all going to speak civilly here tonight. And we each get 3 minutes to rant and rave. At Lee Farton.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn. Second.
This is the first one-page agenda I've seen from you all, so.
Wendy's for frozen.
You know, we don't have a designated topic tonight. I apologize for getting the minutes out so late because I didn't have any internet. That's my excuse. I'm going to stand by it. But there's been a lot of fires. We could certainly talk about the fires coming up, the ones that have been on public land. When you give Phil a chance, but I just want to say I think the fire department is really great that Kern County has. I mean, I had a fire right next to my house, and 40 guys just came out and saved the day. So wow. It was really good.
Wow.
Yeah. So I wish that somebody was here from Kern County.
You need to be more careful.
Oh man, actually, it was the people remodeling. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The story goes on. So.
To touch on that, Charlie, I had a fire not even a block away.
Yeah.
In the same month.
That's right. It was the same.
Boom. Just like that. It was out. Mm-hmm. It was an abandoned trailer, and it has a long story, too.
Yeah.
This
was the same thing, an abandoned trailer with people living in it that were supposedly rebuilding it, and they had a they were camping outside.
Yep.
You know, cooking outside. And then they left when the fire started. And it was a 3-acre fire.
So they ran out of hot dogs?
I think it was tacos, but Felspar. It's called the Felspar Fire, and it started. And Watch Duty, if you don't have that app on your phone, it really is.
Such a great.
It can be a lifesaver. Found out about the Canyon Fire that way. It burned 3 acres of around the well house that we have. 3 acres, 3 homes, and no houses were damaged.
Wow.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So we don't have any speakers, and there was one I just heard, but Transition Habitat, huh?
Yeah, I don't want to take away from the agenda, though, so I'm happy to go later, but I can share a little bit about the organization.
Okay, that'd be great, if you could.
I've got a video that I can share later, too, if you all are interested in that, or I can just share the link to it as well.
I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, so do you want me to give a
That would be great, now? Yeah, if you have handouts. I'm kidding.
I should have come a little bit more prepared.
Are you, okay. Sam, are you, are we talking about new member? Are you proposing to be a new member, or are you just...
I think I was just coming to listen in, and Will invited me because he heard about a project we were working on at the Friends of Jawbone meeting and thought that some folks here might be interested.
You know, typically, you would come to these meetings on your own and figure out whether it's appropriate to what you're doing. So I think it is from my view.
Yeah, and we do have some overlap with your all's interests. So a little bit more about my organization. We are a land trust. We work primarily in Los Angeles and San Bernardino counties, but we do have some overlap. We own a few thousand acres out in the Fremont Kramer ACEC, which overlaps with the Red Mountain subregion that the Ridgecrest office manages. So we own land in that checkerboard that you all are probably familiar with down on 395.
There was a fire in that area.
Really?
Wasn't there recently?
The DTRNA, I think, had one out near Cal City.
Okay, yeah.
And that's part of the project, actually. We can talk about invasive grasses.
Okay.
But yeah, so we have acquired land out there, like I said, about 5,000 acres and a few thousand more in process, trying to fill in those gaps, make the BLM's management a little bit easier, ensure access for people to go out there and do bird watching, camping, and whatever
rock
else they
want
to do. Rock hounding, yeah.
Thank you.
So our lands are effectively open to the public like the BLM lands. We don't really distinguish them out there, but we do assist with some of the route restoration, primarily on the Barstow side of the field office, just because that's where the majority of our land is and where we overlap. So we restore illegal OHV routes. We've applied for the state parks grants in the past to do that work. But right now we are working on a big $2 million grant from the Wildlife Conservation Board in California, more specifically for tortoise conservation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working with Tim Shields, if you all are familiar with his work, the tortoise biologist.
Mm-hmm.
His organization...
Tina Irway. Emway Irway? Isn't it Tina?
Tim.
Tina, the lady who comes from...
She might be over there too. Yeah, Tim has worked with everybody, I think, and he's done work over at the DTRNA too.
Yeah.
But they are really examining various technologies for tortoise conservation. So some of it's predator management with ravens, egg oiling, lasers, techno-torts, which you may have seen. I've actually even got a 15-minute video that I could share if that's more the speed tonight.
We try to keep it around 30 max.
Okay.
But that kind of includes questions, I think. Whatever.
But yeah, and so it's predator deterrent. But the thing that caught Will's attention, I think, was tortoise tracking.
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to improve a little bit on the big telemetry technology where you got to go out with your radio tower. So we have these lower profile trackers that we're putting on the tortoises right now. I think there's 13 on so far. We're hoping to get another couple dozen at least this spring and summer, but they ping off of radio towers, and Will is familiar with a lot of the ham radio technology and repeaters, and Tim called it a mesh network. I don't really know what that means. They're using that to pull all this data from these little sensors. You can get temperature, you can get accelerometer, so you know when the tortoise is moving, how fast, hot spots, where it's hanging out.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Where it lasts, where the burrows are.
Yeah.
So it's just a wealth of data, and we're just starting to explore it. So we're using a lot of technology to also try to predict tortoise habitat. And now the next phase of this is going to be improving habitat in areas where it's especially taken over by schismus and other invasive grasses that are decreasing the forage value for the tortoises and also creating this fire risk, which is very new to these environments. So it's a multi-fronted project. That's why it's cost $2 million to the state. But we're wrapping it up now after about 3 years. And so we're hoping to have more to report by this fall or so after we finish all our final reporting. But we did present some preliminary findings to CDFW and Fish and Wildlife Service. So I've got an hour-long video that I could maybe share out for anybody who wants to dive deeper into this stuff. But there's also like a 15-minute New Yorker documentary that was really nicely well put together. If people were interested in that tonight, I could definitely pull that up for a link.
I vote
yes.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it sounds good.
Can I make a suggestion? We have some contentious WEMO stuff. And some guests on the agenda tonight, and also the data center. Could we wade through that first and then put Sam's thing in there? I mean, the whole benefit of, we talked about not having speakers and programs so that we could actually dive right into
that. Would be good.
Stuff.
I mean, that was
I'm not, no disrespect to you,
totally
Sam,
fine.
But there are some pretty contentious things here tonight.
Plus, a rite of initiation, you have to sit through the rest
of it.
Completely went out of my mind when I heard about the tortoise
with the lights on.
Right. I'm totally up for looking at the short film, but maybe after we've done this.
That sounds good.
Well, okay, if we're going to do that,
I'm interested in those topics too.
So, I guess we could jump right into one, but I think Phil might want to start off with what.
Yeah.
He might start off with.
I haven't seen y'all since last year.
Yeah.
And you got a lot most of you, but I've got a few of you I've run
back,
into.
By the way.
Well, thanks. I've been here the whole time, but not on Thursday nights, right? So, one big thanks to Dana and Tom for covering for me while I did the EMT class here at the community college. It was really valuable. I actually put to use once already, unfortunately, out there in the field in my day job, but it wasn't the game plan. But, proves useful. And also appreciate you all understanding and working with them over the course of the first part of the year. And I'll start there. Our staffing obviously continues to go in the wrong direction with Tom's retirement. Y'all got to see him off at the last meeting. Huge loss for this office, obviously.
Yes.
This week, Paul Rodriguez is retiring as well, and actually, I'm sending him your well wishes. He's not alone well as we speak.
What does he do?
He is the lands and realty specialist. He's been here, I think, 15 years.
How long was Tom here, Phil?
Tom was in this office since 2019. Actually, we started almost the same time I did in the India. We started here, but with the BLM and the Forest Service for almost 30 years. He had a long public service career, and I'm sure he'll continue in public service in one capacity or another. You know, you can't just let that itch not be scratched, but I'm really happy for him, and he got an opportunity to leave with a nice incentive and on his own terms. But he's been a huge part of our office's success, and certainly since I got here, it almost brought me to tears how he's been willing to step back from the acting field manager role and embrace me as the permanent manager and be a huge team player, you know, filling the roles in the planning and environmental coordinator side when we lost Max a couple years ago, and taking the ball and running with it in terms of our mining team that he's been managing, especially with that being a bigger priority with this administration over the past year and a half. So we're scrambling a little bit. We have a game plan and working to figure out how those duties are going to be covered and which duties are going to fall by the wayside, because that's really where we're at, right, when it comes to staffing. I just sit down with them and say, what happens if we don't do X, Y, and Z? What are the real consequences? And we've got to make some tough decisions. And that means a lot of our discretionary or the projects we kind of get the most joy out of, right, for a lot of our staff are on the back burner for now. And our focus continues to be mining, electricity transmission with our huge SCE projects, and then our OHV program. Some of those decisions are being made for us, as we'll get to on the OHV side of things. But fire, obviously, continues to be a challenge for us as well. A lot of changes in the fire world. The Department of Interior has consolidated to the United States Wild and Fire Service, acronym oft confused with the Fish and Wildlife Service, because it's just a flip of a letter there. But all of our permanent fire employees have been consolidated into that new agency. Functionally, that hasn't changed much for us, but we're slowly but surely seeing the rollout of this. And so our response areas have changed for this office, where the entire Ridgecrest office was under the Desert District. Now it's kind of split in two. So once you hit that Inyo County line, I'm talking to Lance Rosen up there at the Bishop office. Fortunately for me, Lance and I have a long and great history of working together because he was my FMO on the forest when I started there. And he's a great guy. We don't have as many of our big incidents up there in the Inyo County side of our field office either. And then on the Kern County side, it'll remain with basically the CDD type of structure. That Paul Gibbs is the chief for, and the same sort of structure that I have there. Craig Owen continues to run the engine now out of Salt Wells. So he switched over, he's in Salt Lanches, Inyo County, to be permanently down here. And we have our cover engines that come for both of those stations as needed. So, so far, we've been tested in this arrangement pretty well. If you hadn't seen the scars on the hillside, we've had three large fires so far this year, the Sheep Springs fire being the first one back in March. Right. And we had a record-setting March. I sat down with Mike Reynolds over at Death Valley a couple times in April for various things, and he mentioned to me March was the hottest year on record by 5.5 degrees. Wow. Now, if you know anything about temperature, we don't do those kind of record-breaking numbers.
And this has got to be the coldest this time of year.
And right, you know, I'm about to head over the hill tonight and probably going to hit some snow here on May 28th of this year. So it's definitely...
So what's record? No, for well, we're talking about on record. That's like 75 years, 80 years we've been keeping track.
We've been keeping records for 150 years.
Oh, wow.
150. There are 14 days over 100 degrees in Death Valley in March, the previous record was 3. And if April was the, or I think it's 12 and 3, I get the 14s and 12s because we'll get that in a second. If March was April, it would have been the 14th hottest April on record in Death Valley. So they're a really hot March that made the super bloom go away real quickly. Mm-hmm. But also all the grass that's been growing since September is now well cured. And I was out there today in the eastern side of the Sierra Mountains, Short Canyon, San Cave, that sort of thing. There's a lot of connecting fuels in all these places.
Yeah.
So when Craig Owen and I sat down for our preseason fire meeting, not 3 days before the Sheep Springs fire, they said, you know, those fires that went an acre last year, they're going to go to 2030. And those fires that went 20 and 30, they're going to go 1,000, 2,000. And we saw that this past month with the Canyon fire and the Neuralia fire. The Canyon fire is the one you can see from here, right? That burned in the wilderness. The El Paso wilderness.
Go ahead.
A little over 2,000 acres, and we're putting in some funding so that we can continue to patrol that and make sure folks stay out of the wilderness and the looky-loos with that situation there. Yes, please.
Do you have any idea how all these fires are starting? It's crazy.
All three of those are human caused.
That's what I think.
I don't want to put it on recording for the Canyon fire, but I'm pretty sure everyone knows how that went down. Unfortunately, two folks perished.
Yeah.
Two people died.
Yeah.
It can't be spontaneous combustion everywhere.
None of those three have been natural, but, you know, those little fires that are started by a car accident or, a hot muffler and that sort of thing, we were able to get around a lot more quickly in the past. With those connecting fuels, they're going up a lot quicker. And we can expect that to continue throughout the summer. And then Rally of Fire, we saw the same thing. That was the first one with a big wind behind it. We were real worried about that one. Mm-hmm. It did burn into the DTRNA. Yeah. Fortunately, we didn't have to go out there with any heavy equipment to get around it, so we were able to avoid that, especially this time of year with the tortoises out and about. I think two fence posts burnt up on the preserve, so we got pretty lucky there again. But again, it's May, so we'll see what happens next. Yes, sir.
Is the road to Sheep Spring closed?
Everything should be open now. Yeah, we had to close that down for the Canyon fire just because of logistics, but it was only a couple days that we closed it down. So they have to do obviously operations within body recovery and that sort of thing too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a rough one. But again, all those first operational shifts, we've been able to get around throwing heavy air tankers at them and getting help.
Yeah, you responded really quick to the Canyon fire. That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, and Craig was on all three of those actually as the initial IC, and he did a really good job.
So real fast, if I can, the reaction was the consolidation that was done by the executive order. Did it affect the response to the fire?
No, at all.
Yeah. Has it changed it? Did it make it better? Did it make it worse? Sorry, maybe you don't want to say.
I don't think that we can really say at this point. And folks haven't moved around physically.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and that's probably going to come and happen. But the idea this year, from what we were told, is like, we're doing this stuff on paper, right? And we're going to see what makes sense in terms of efficiencies, where we have staff, and where we need the most, you know, have the most fire needs. Now that we can move somebody from Park Service to BLM facilities, because they're all kind of one. In the future, they'll be making those types of decisions.
Yeah.
But right now, functionally, we're the same. There's different. I mean, everybody saw the same email address.
Okay, after. Ruth, you have some.
Can you tell us if on the wilderness area for that fire, if they were able to use any mechanical anything?
I did authorize mechanical use in the wilderness. So
the management plan for that allows the field office to make a decision.
It's not the management plan. I have the authority as agency administrator and line officer to do that with specialized training and in specific instances. In that case, we were under threat of that fire growing beyond the wilderness and threatening life and property. Also, it was early in fire season, so we don't have everybody on board yet in terms of seasonals. There were also wasn't confirmed that the fatalities existed at that point too, so there was a recovery search and rescue process in place as well. We really minimized the use of that as much as possible, but I'd say the most significant mechanical use in that situation was actually to go and drive and get the bodies. There was some chainsaw use for brushing to clear out the line, and that worked pretty effectively.
Well, thanks for making that decision and getting it put out instead of letting it burn through it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the directive that we have, but also I take my P's and Q's from the professionals, right? I obviously want to protect those values, and we go in right back in afterwards, we cover that stuff up, right? We try to mask it, and like I said, we put in for funding so that we can monitor it. If we need to do additional work to, you know, help those wilderness values come back, you know, via man, human activity, right? Then we'll do that, but really I think the biggest piece from our perspective for that, after we did the initial rehabilitation with the crews that were on board, is to monitor it so that people don't go and take those tracks that are now pretty obvious that used to be covered up by brush and start turning them into trails.
So the plane crash has to be removed from the wilderness area.
Oh man, that's another ball of wax, let me tell you. So we have to give the private entity an opportunity with their insurance company to do that on their own, but we have put in for funding if that doesn't happen in the next year.
By the way, the wife of the pilot deceased went to GoFundMe page.
Okay.
Hang on a second. Did a GoFundMe page, announced that her, I'm just saying, this is what I saw. Did a GoFundMe page, announced that her husband had crashed. Sorry. Did announce that her husband had died in the crash, okay, and then nobody in any media and that would say that there was even a plane crash. Even today, you saw your reticence.
It's under investigation.
Yeah, it's and I asked Kern County Fire Department. They came to the house. What's the story? And we can't tell it. You know, I'm sorry, we can't talk about it. It's like, well, what's up with that? You know, it's like the lady.
You don't want to mess with an investigation like that.
Well, of course not. But I mean, normally when there's a plane crash, everybody knows about it.
Yeah.
You know,
unless
it's a TS plane, and we've seen HavBlue, and you know, we've had Edwards Air Force Base have crashes.
Yeah, I'm not an investigator on that kind of thing, so I just tell me to do that.
Yeah,
but the wreckage will get removed one way or the other. How long it'll take is another story, and by whom. We have contingency plans for that.
Okay, sounds good.
So that's the fire world right now. We're ramping up for what we expect to be a busy season.
Okay.
And if you're going down 14, please notice the nice boss check ring around the fire. I mean, it burned right up to it.
Perfect. Yeah.
Stuff works. Works great. Yeah, it's really pretty right now.
I will say this. It's just that. It's retardant, right? It slows it down. So on the other side of the FOSS check are people, right? Cut in line.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what they were doing. Right. That gives them a fighting chance.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it did in that case. But there's a lot that had to be dumped there and a lot of hard work. I mean, through the night, 200 people out there.
It was amazing. It was really
cut
that
up. Phil, is the retardant biodegradable?
Yes. It's basically fertilizer.
Yeah.
And once there's rain, that color is going to go away and it's going to go back into the soil.
Yeah.
We avoid riparian areas as much as we can with that. There's maps that all the pilots and the ICs and the commanders have so they can make sure that they're strategically dropping it so that it doesn't impact Riparian areas and other sensitive areas like cultural resources and that sort of thing. Not to say it never happens, but I think in this case we were able to confirm that very little damage was done by the fire itself and none by the retardant directly to those values that were known. There is a guzzler up there in the wilderness that got burned through, very little damage, and we'll be actually working with y'all in the months ahead, I'm sure, to get out there and fix it up, but some posts need to be replaced. It was pretty fortunate there that there wasn't much damage to the guzzler. But that's our biggest one, the canyon. The other two are just going to let nature take its course in terms of coming back, and the weather today should help us with that. And it also helps the retardants, you know, that we love that pink up there on the hillside. It shouldn't last that
long. Oh, it's a new gun range.
Whoa. Well, you know, almost burned the gun range, too. I mean, it was going that way.
Did it make it as far as the Therese site? You know where that's at, right? On the east side of the parallel?
The cultural resource site.
Yeah.
I don't really want to talk about that publicly. I can talk to you offline about it.
That site is known and published and on the internet, and everyone in town. In fact, Matt Arango led the excavations of that. Everybody in town.
I can say that the cultural resources sites within and around the fire area.
It didn't get to the same.
Therese. There was no permit.
That's like saying we won't talk about Sheep Spring. It's kind of like everybody already knows.
I understand, but this goes online, and I also have rules I have to follow. So.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Understand.
I hope that Liz is on. So
we absolutely.
Okay. Yes. Every time we have a fire in the El Pasos at the Matarango, I start getting the calls. Hey, I found some cool new rock art in the El Pasos. Oh, hey, I found some stuff. Yeah. Those people are up there literally as soon as the embers cool. It's astounding to me.
This is why I put in for the patrols.
Astounding to me how they. I'll get.
It's the biggest thing we see. You know, people try to establish new tracks and wives, and then get to the
same. Wow.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
They start artifact hunting second.
So we're very cognizant of that, and we do a lot of work to prevent that from.
Another kind of interesting outcome of the fire, I believe, is the next day, well, soon after the next day, I went to the club claim for the Gem and Minerals, and there were two burros. I've gone to the El Pasos many, many times, years and years. I probably went every weekend over 10 years period. Okay, never saw a burro.
Yeah. So those two burros got loose from Sadie Nutter in town. They're former BLM burros.
Yeah, yeah, I saw them.
Trained very well.
Yeah.
Oh, that lady said
they know where home is.
I thought that they were maybe somehow in the wilderness area and came.
Are those the ones she
been out there for since January?
Okay. Hadn't seen them.
They're not far from the jackass who's. Out by Searle Station, and they've been sighted quite a few times.
Okay.
By people.
It's been on Facebook.
I missed them.
Yeah.
Okay.
John, a lady in my exercise class, my silver sneakers class, she said, oh, my daughter, someone stole the burros. She came and announced that in class. And it was those two burros, and then everybody was asking about them for days. No, we haven't found them. Someone stole them. So it's those two. They ran away. They just went.
They got out. Someone let them out, or they got out. But,
we were all
It was pretty funny. I was driving out to them, and I, you know, and they stopped, and they came over and looked inside the car. I was like, is there a burro driving in there?
We had one out there last year, and we tried to go and catch it. By the time we mobilized to do it, we couldn't find it, right? So if you hear about that kind of stuff, let us know, and if we've got the resources, we'll do it. But
I should have called John.
Speaking of wild horses and burros, we've got two people in terms of staff for over 1,000 animals. We got most of the animals from the Beatty Gather to our facility, so we're really at max capacity right now. And working to move those animals out so we can do the China Lake Gather in the fall. It's another challenge. And down to 6 law enforcement officers. We lost another law enforcement officer who transferred out. So our 8 is where we started when I got here, and now we've got 6. So, but I wanted to cover a couple other things real quick. On the mining side, Mojave Precious Metals has been approved and is in the process of implementation. They just started mobilization a week ago, and they'll probably start drilling. I think they're scheduled for June 8th, if I'm not mistaken. And we've got a robust tribal monitoring program associated with that. So we've got folks out there flying in the helicopters with them.
Flying the helicopters, bringing water in by helicopter.
Yes.
Yes. The paperwork, when you look at it all, It doesn't say too much about the water. It says the helicopters will bring it in. However, where's the source coming from?
So I got a call actually from Inyo County about this today. Since they are not using that much water, it's 10,000 gallons that's estimated, as opposed to, as we went through this process, we're looking at 2 million potentially.
Yeah.
They are able to operate under a threshold where they can just buy that from a retail establishment that has a commercial license with the state of California. That's not under my regulatory purview. Any water they bring out there needs to be covered if it's being stored. That's the extent that I can regulate that amount of water. And I believe the county is looking into, because they have jurisdiction to identify who is selling it to them. I don't have that ability, even if I wanted to do that.
But, you know, what I judge to be a lot of water, mm-hmm. maybe somebody else doesn't.
Okay.
And since I haul my own water.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And I know how much water I use per day.
Mm-hmm.
I use, in the summertime, 36 gallons. So to me, somebody's saying, well, it doesn't really matter. It's not that much water.
Obviously it matters.
However, where they're getting the water from, if it's coming from Darwin, it does matter.
There's no commercial entity in Darwin with the license to sell water.
If it's coming from Keeler, it does matter.
I don't know. I can say
Thank you.
But they are transporting it. I do know wherever they're getting from, they're transporting it from the Lone Pine Airport to the site.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine it's coming from too far away there. But that said, well below the thresholds where I can have any involvement in it, and the county is interested in that same question. So if I were you, I'd direct your question to the county, because they called me and do you know? And I'm like, look, I couldn't ask them that if I wanted to, and I've got plenty of other questions to focus on with them, and that's what I'm doing.
Right.
All in all, far less impactful than the stuff we were talking about a year ago potentially happening up there, water
right.
otherwise.
Right.
And I've seen the pictures of the platforms they've built so far for the drilling rigs. Drilling rigs aren't out there yet, and it's quite minimal. At the locations. That said, it's still something.
If that source is identified, will you let us know?
Again, I won't have that information. The county is the only entity that can actually obtain that information and share it.
Who's that?
If I did get it, it would be proprietary information that I want regulatory authority to share.
Right.
But I don't think I will get it, you know, because there's no reason for me to.
No need
Thank
to know.
You.
Was it county water or planning?
Sam.
The county attorney called me today, so yeah, and I let him know the same thing. If you guys want to exercise your authority to get that information, it's up to you.
So any other mining?
So you will be seeing in the months ahead, we've been solicited to put parcels in the Haley area up for bid for geothermal.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working through the environmental documentation for that. It will be a public auction for the lease.
Interesting.
So all this entails, it's kind of, I equate it in layman's terms, if you will, to a mining claim. You can go out there and stake a mining claim with geothermal. You can't do that. It has to be a public auction for it.
Yeah, so out there we're going
to
be auctioning.
We have to do some preliminary work to say, yeah, you can actually, this land is suitable for potential development.
Mm-hmm.
If those parcels are made available and someone purchases at auction the lease for them, they would then propose development just like you would on a mining claim.
Okay.
At that point, we would go through a full-scale environmental and cultural review like we would for any other planned development. That would involve public and tribal involvement and all of the resource analysis that you could imagine.
So if I remember the Inyo GIS, it's land, BLM comes up very close to actually to Haywee itself, very close on one section. And I've used that for fishing, by the way. And it goes to land, BLM land goes to the east of the lake. So that's the area we're talking about between that and Cactus Flat.
Yeah, more or less 395 to the base.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, this will all be publicly available when we get to that stage, and that's going to happen quite quickly.
Okay.
But I wanted to let you all know that, because by the time we get to, I think that should be published in August, and we're going out there with our tribal partners next month, actually, to look at the land. But just the first phase and any sort of
right.
potential development, and no ground disturbing activities authorized as a result.
Yeah.
And no roads built through the wilderness there, is that correct?
Correct, yeah. It's not, none of it's in wilderness.
What wilderness?
It's not
wilderness.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah,
right.
You can't develop.
It's not right.
The other stuff, you've seen the fences go up down there in Atolia for the persistence mine, so they're well underway in terms of their implementation. We've talked about it here before. And I've got a lot of other potential plans of development in the queue. They're really in their infancies, but mining interest and activity both have picked up, as we predicted. So, of course, as those things ripen, I will keep you all informed. But right now, those are the big three that I'm focused on. Two of those are in implementation, and one is in environmental review. And then, yeah, the electricity work, we're doing with SE by and large. There's a little bit of DWP stuff, but the transmission lines, I have a pot of control,
right.
is the big one that we're going through the process right now with, and then Cal City further south to rebuild transmission lines.
The legislative review, or the plan of action that you were going for, the legislative action that was done for the conservation area, the desert tortoise conservation area, yet by June you were obligated to come up with a plan.
So shifting gears to WEMA, I do want to say one
yeah.
thing real quick.
Okay.
Usually I share a list of our projects with you.
Oh, yeah.
It's changed quite a bit in the past
project.
Few weeks. So I wasn't ready for prime time. I should have that to share with you at our next meeting, though. So
okay.
you can see all this in black and white. Because it has changed quite a bit, and a lot of things have been cut off of it, as I previously stated, because we just simply don't have the capacity to work on those things.
Right.
But the big stuff remains in these priority areas. OHV being one of them. So I just actually signed the decision so that we can finalize our grant application for next year
okay.
for OHV. I think fortunately we did not include any ground disturbing activity within what is now the closure area in our existing grant. maybe crystal ball, we saw probably not going to be the best approach, and sure enough we would have lost money if we did it that way, or maybe all of it again
good
like
point,
we did
yeah.
last year. So we've been able to retain those funds, and we should be able to continue to access those funds to manage the rest of our field office OHV area. And our ground disturbing activity is going to be focused in the Panamint Valley this year. A relatively minor road maintenance, but a lot of routes that haven't got much attention because they don't get as much use. But since we can't do as much work down south, we decided to shift gears and focus there. And then next year, our application that we put in, that's on the website now, and we just finalized the final grant application. Or we'll have some additional work in the Spangler Hills in particular. So we'll be coming back down south as much as we can.
OHV.
So yeah. Go,
the OHV area in the Spanglers?
Yeah, so that's not affected by the closure, but everything south of it pretty much is.
What about in the El Pasos? Any chance you could now work in the El Pasos with some of the grant money?
If that's something that you all want to see us do in the future, we finalize this grant cycle, which would be what we get next year, so G27. Mm-hmm. So we have those processes. Of kind of, if you recall, we go through that in January and February of each year and solicit your feedback on what routes you would like to see us focus on. So if there are routes in the El Pasos you would like to see us include in the future, we can do that, but it wouldn't be now until 28, and we'll be doing that next January.
So the moratorium that is in place currently does not apply, because now that you've had the WEMO action, I mean, everything south of trying to take 138 that you said you were not going to do any road maintenance on or allocate any funding for, because there was chances of what happening. Yeah.
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 Yeah. So we take the risk, and that was a good move. Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah. now the El Pasos were not affected because it's not a tortoise conservation
Charlie,
area.
I made a request. I attended the grant thing with
yeah.
Katie, and I made a request
yeah.
that two areas in particular I wanted to see, and that's
yeah.
the route to Sheep Springs, if
right.
we could improve that,
right.
and try to do something with Centennial Canyon.
EP-15 is like used every weekend,
and
it's
crazy.
That
up. I brought that up to Katie, and she was like, we'll have to wait.
It's like the main route in there.
Another year.
Yeah, and we can make sure now that we're aware of it, because like I said, we put that in. We can't significantly change the grant application once we submit it in February.
Yeah, okay.
So that would be a significant change.
Okay,
that's but
significant.
If you made those, if Katie's already aware of them, then they'll be in the queue.
Yeah, and I think I also asked for areas that are popular with tourists and locals
yeah.
access, and I think I also said something about if possible Short Canyon or Sand Canyon, and that I know is iffy because some of that's LA Water and Power.
And we have been working with them. I was out there today. A lot of those routes look pretty good. They're definitely something that needs some work, though, too. We had to turn around a couple spots with my law enforcement folks. So if you have those types of ideas, now's the time to get them to us so that we know in January that this is what the public wants to see us doing. We can only do so much, though, too, not only because of the grant limitations, but also we don't have a heavy equipment operator, Rob, left the last
day. That was another problem.
So we're kind of begging, borrowing, and stealing from other offices. We got to rent equipment when we do bring folks up from Barstow to run the equipment.
Okay.
So we're trying to concentrate in an area where we can kind of do that work in 1 week. You know, rent the equipment, get the person up here, get it all done in this concentrated area in a week or two. So that's another way we're thinking about things. As far as the closure goes, I haven't spoken with you all about it, but certainly I have with friends at Jawbone and several of you individually as a result of that. That information is online. We have put out the closure. We have our first monitoring report to the courts due next month. So I just had a call actually yesterday about how we're going about doing that. So we're keeping track of contacts we're making.
Mm-hmm.
The extent of the work we've done is to publish that all online. We are working on more micro maps, focal area maps, so that people can see some of the details a little bit better than our large maps and have those geolocatable on their phone. State office has taken a little bit more time than I'd like us to produce those. We want to make sure they're accurate. So that large map's what we can work from right now. There's QR codes we put on the maps out front here, so you can look online and download those from the website as well if you use Avenza or any of those types of apps that are available to you, but it doesn't have the level of detail maybe that you're used to seeing. Friends of Jawbone is talking about publishing a new map that reflects the closure area. We're kind of hesitant because then what if that becomes outdated immediately too, right? We don't want to further confuse the public, but we're considering that very strongly. That might be something we do this year, depending on probably how the next few months go with ongoing conversations with the courts and the litigants.
And when that happens, would you mind immediately getting it up into our area? We got four billboards up there, at least four, that are obsolete as hell, from the 07, faded out, you name it. And
comments.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so.
We want to get those more zoomed in maps before we go and we update that stuff.
Can you consult with us to when you do that? Or some of us that live up there?
What do you mean?
What you're going to put on the maps and what are the boundaries of it and so forth?
Well, so we've got the special management area for the RANs. That's already out there and online. It's not geolocatable, so we're working on fixing that with the permitted area. We have basically one zoomed in map for this office. The others are all in the Barstow field office, and it includes everything, our 400 miles or so of routes all around where you live. So there's one map that would just have all that with all the route numbers. It doesn't change anything, but it shows it more clearly.
Right.
So yeah, we can't change anything else at this point.
I'm not expecting for changes, just so that people know where they can go and where they should go.
Yeah, so it's gonna have the same information that's on the big map, but just more detail on it.
And the origin of some of that is in Barstow.
Barstow has the bulk of the closure area, so they're gonna have more zoom maps because they have more areas than
you guys are for us up there.
Yeah, we just have the one. Yeah.
Are you producing your maps in-house, or are you depending on Barstow and the state to produce
them? The state office is producing them for everybody for consistency. They also have the expertise. Yeah.
Signage? Is there effect? Is that?
We haven't implemented signage as of yet. We don't have the capacity.
No.
Yeah.
Is Peggy at the state office working on this? Is it Peggy, do you know?
No, not Peggy. It's a fella. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. I have to look it up. Yeah.
Any feedback on how, from Ellie's, on how it's going so far?
I'm getting biweekly reports from them, and it varies for a couple of reasons. One, some of our law enforcement officers, we did lose the one here at the beginning of May, are on detail assignments for a variety of places as the summer comes up, fire, border patrol, and our marijuana eradication program. So staffing dependence, I'm taking a leave right now as we're going, but we're also going into sort of the down season in the summer. So we have been keeping track of how many contacts we're making, the damage we're seeing out there. Actually, quite minimal damage thus far. Not a ton of contacts, but it does seem to have varied so far quite a bit over the course of the 2 months we have. So hard to say there's any trends. But we'll know a lot more, I think, by the time we get to next year's, we'll have a whole year's worth of information when it comes to that. And that's information that we're utilizing to share with the courts. So we can say, yeah, we are out there monitoring. This is what we've seen, and this is what we're doing. We don't have capacity to go and block grouts and fence things beyond what we already have planned, the normal work that we have on our grant to maintain restored routes and close a few. So you saw a lot of fencing go up around the Cutty Back Road. That was planned for years, right? Like, it has nothing to do with this. It just happens to be in the same location. And that fence looks great. I heard some people say they were going to target it because they thought it was a result of this closure. It's like, please don't. The kids that did all that work were out there sweating and doing really good work. You can still get to the previously legal areas. Mm-hmm. So what's the point? And fortunately, I think some of that fervor has calmed down a little bit.
Okay, thanks for the update for WEMO. Unless there's any other questions about WEMO, I was wondering about the pipeline project for the water district, if there's any update on that.
That has gotten some momentum. The groundwater authorities have re-engaged us, mm-hmm. and they've hired an additional consultant, I think, to get some better coordination between mm-hmm. the Provost Pritchard consulting group that's writing the NEPA and the groundwater authority and us, and we've seen quite a bit of progress being made. Their intent to us is to have a draft environmental document to us by this fall.
Okay.
Given our previous experience with all of this, it's more of a believe it when I see it. But I'm encouraged on that side of thing. And as we've all talked about before, my role, again, isn't water.
No.
Right? I don't have jurisdiction or interest.
But just the land.
But the land side of it, there were a lot of changes made from the initial proposal to now, particularly on how electricity was going to get to the pumps. So that's the big change in their proposal that we've had to accommodate and account for. And, surveys have to be done, writing has to be done, and analysis related to it.
And the route of the pipeline, I find it interesting that the route of the pipeline that I know of, at least most recently that I know of, follows the Garlock Road, which isn't even open because of,
it could end up being a really interesting timing for happenstance reasons, right? Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. It'll be interesting to see how that evolves, but
how that works out.
Yeah, so it might be easier for them to get in there and do the work at this stage.
I was wondering if it had something to do with why the road wasn't being repaired, but that's probably...
A friend of mine who works for Kern County Roads and whatever said the reason Garlock hasn't been repaired is... Up until now, all the repairs to Garlock are done through emergency highway for stuff from Washington.
Yeah.
We get money to fix emergency things. That money's gone. Mm-hmm. Trump administration has cut it off. There will be no more money to the county to fix Garlock, and so they've said we're not fixing it because we don't. Kern County is strapped.
Wow.
How long has it been closed for?
I can say this too. It's been closed
since September 18th.
We had a quite similar situation where I live in the Kern River Valley on Sierra Way. If you've ever been on the south side of the lake there, south fork of the Kern River, it just kept washing away until the point where it was gone. There was a big hole in the ground.
Right.
And I said, we've got to fix this right. And it took a couple of years,
and there was a lot of challenges
in between. I mean, actually, people got stuck during fires
because
there was no other exit.
And
now it's been fixed properly, mm-hmm. and from all it will remain that way, and it's very nice.
The county's got
it fixed.
Was it a landslide that caused?
County's
got to come up with
money.
It's 2023 flooding. Yeah, from the big
snowmelt. Was it a landslide that caused a problem, or was it flooding down by the bird sanctuary area?
It was flooding, and the snowmelt just knocked everything out.
And
created a huge gully. So they were just filling it in with dirt.
Eventually,
it was like, we can't do this anymore.
Okay.
So I hope, from what I've heard, they're going to fix it properly.
Good.
That's going to mean some engineering, a lot more money, and time.
There's just no sources of the money right now.
Are you talking about Carlisle to Red Rock Ranch?
Yes, please.
Our guest has a quilt.
Can't get fixed because there's no money. And Garlock can't get fixed.
Barbara?
Is Garlock messed up?
What? Sir.
What were you saying? I understand what you said about they've run out of emergency money, but I couldn't hear what you said after that.
They have no money. The county was getting money to fix, do emergency repairs every time Garlock would wash up.
Got that.
That money has dried up. There will be no more coming to these counties.
So are they saying they're not fixing it?
No. They don't have the money to fix it.
And they can't take the money from anywhere else?
No, it is not a priority for Kern County.
That's
it is not. It probably could come from somewhere, but in their wisdom, Kern County is not going to allocate money to Garlock when they're going to run a big deficit next year. Their labor costs are killing them. They've cut, they've slashed health and whatever to the bone.
I know it's not you. I know you're just the
messenger. Talk to Philip. Peters.
I had customers recently come in and talk to Philip Peters. We would have been here way before.
I hear
but
you.
But the road, so yeah. between to. Trail closures and road closures yeah. and signs being torn
yeah.
down,
yeah. it's killing them. Talk to Philip Peters. Kern County is not going to allocate the money for this. You can't squeeze blood out of a turnip. And right. that's what Kern County is right now, a turnip, facing budget deficits. It's going to get a lot worse next year. So the pressure has to be put on the county.
So anyone else you can suggest we write to or just him?
Karen.
I would write to all. When I send a beef to supervisors, I just send it to all five of them. You don't vote for them, and they're not going to listen to you as much as Peters would, but... Call put the pressure on every place right. you can.
Yeah, calling the office is also probably.
You can get a meeting with them here in town too,
or his representative.
Yeah,
and
the
you can go to those.
Really
they come
job.
Like once a month, and you go to them and you tell them. Same with Vince Fong. Their representatives come to town. You go to the little meeting and you say, "Hey, this is my number one.
A lot of people I know.
This is my number one priority.
Happy,
but the squeaky wheel. You got to tell them. Just complaining about it doesn't do any good. You got to go to them and get your friends to go to them. Have 10 people show up at a representative's meeting and say, hey, Peters, we want this fixed.
So we got WEMA, we got the pipeline, we got the road, Garlock Road. What else we... I know we got data center in here, and the BLM's not... doesn't have an iron in that fire.
No.
Confirmed. You said that to me. I immediately sent it to Mariella and my Lancer Relay Specialist and said, tell me this doesn't involve us.
Yeah, please.
Confirmed. That does not touch BLM.
Where are you, Phil?
You luck out on that.
So before we jump into that one, what else do we have? I'm asking everybody at the table.
Data center. I think that's it, data center.
I'm not at the table, but I have something to say. Barbara, my name is Danielle Schiller, and I haven't officially met you, but I have to tell you, just sitting in this particular meeting, you're an amazing resource, an abundance of information, and I just want to let you know that I acknowledge that
Thank
and
you.
Appreciate it.
I'm just a news geek.
She knows it.
I just keep
I didn't know it.
I keep my nose to the ground and try to talk to people.
Well, thank you so much for that.
So... Actually, that kind of leads me into another question. We don't have a whole lot of seconds for our members. And if I just wanted to throw this out for all the members real quick. I know it's not the official part of the agenda, but if you have somebody who's an alternate that can also, who in your stead can't be Barbara, for instance, you know, we have a lot of one deep type representation at the table. If we could increase that, it would be good. So think about that, please. Okay. That's it.
How about hearing from Sam?
Can we do data center first?
Yeah. Sure. Oh, I thought we were not going to do
Yes.
That. Yes, by all means.
So
we can end on a higher note.
All right. Yeah, there you go. She checks out. So where we're at with the data center, I'm not really... I got to say one thing. It was Randy Bannis sent me the email. I had no... Before we talk about the data center, there's a forum that we should all be a part of, and that's the California Energy Commission. And you go to their website and you subscribe to what they have going on, and you can find out about all these things. And Randy and Sam had gotten this email from them talking about the Inyo Kern data center before anybody knew about it. And that was, and I didn't know anything about this Energy Commission. So California Energy Commission, check it out, go there, subscribe to their stuff. So like there's new announcements, and of course it's all of California.
And that's who you write to if you're for Oregon.
Exactly. And they tell you what they're doing. You know,
But it's kind of a kind of curious because they have jurisdiction over everything. And
yes.
I don't know how they work, but when you start reading about their agendas, it's like they have a separate group of people that go through all the comments on projects, and then they kind of decide internally. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but they decide internally what they're going to be doing, and they decide whether or not to go forward with the project. It's like, what? These guys have that kind of authority, apparently, so.
They're only the first round.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah,
the ultimate authority will come down to Kern County Board of Supervisors.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay? They are the first step. It's like a multi-step process.
Yeah, okay.
And they say, okay, this sounds like a good idea. We're okayed. But then it's got to go to the local or county entities for final approval. So this is, if you want to comment, you need to comment right now, right now, to the Energy Commission. And there have already been 90 comments against it.
And I've seen the economic, current economic development are all for it.
Right.
The developers are all for it, of course.
You can also read, when you go to that site and plug in Inyo Kern Data Center, whatever, you can read the comments that your friends and neighbors and local people have made. And it's pretty interesting. It's all right there in public.
Mm-hmm.
And your comment goes on there also with your name on it if you want. So it's an interesting thing. But that's got to be done right away. And then it's going to move, if they okay it, it will move to current county supervisors. That's the big one.
And environmental impact statements and reviews would be before it goes to the county?
He has had to submit all of that stuff to a proposal, which is quite lengthy.
Yeah.
He had to submit that to California Energy Commission. That's already been done. Okay, so you can also look at the details and read that proposal if you go to their site.
Right.
So when the Kern County supervisors get it, it's kind of the package is complete. Do you want to do this or no? They're not going to ask for more additional.
Yeah.
They can, I guess. They could say, hey, we think your water studies are kind of wonky.
Plenty of power.
But
plenty of water.
Their power is more like yes, yay, or nay. Okay.
I mean, it's pretty obvious that I'm just saying that the assumption that the water was available is erroneous. It wasn't. Inyo Kern City doesn't have water, and how can a developer state this? I mean, where would the validity factor enter into this?
My understanding is that the water district. What pathetic excuse for a water district they have in Inyo Kern has said, oh yeah, we got the water. And SCE has also told them
we can
deliver the power.
Right,
to
I got that part.
Okay,
yeah.
So Inyo Kern Water District, everybody knows that they don't have.
Yeah.
They can't hardly flush a toilet when they're completely
incoherent.
Can't
drink the water.
Indian Wells Valley Water District is supplying them with water.
Those people that are making that comment actually came from Trona.
That's true. The developers are in Trona. RL Development, whatever.
Barker is a Trona person. And if you really want a lot of information about this, I would suggest going to WTF Ridgecrest and just the Ridgecrest Facebook site.
Yeah.
Because there are a couple of people who are doing some fantastic digging into the works.
Right.
Kitty Carr.
Right.
Jennifer Woods Slayton
They
are doing a phenomenal job of putting more information than you can possibly digest.
There's a lot out there.
They are doing deep dives. So I go to Facebook every day to see what Kitty is putting up there. Her husband is a mechanical engineer, and he has translated a lot of this crap.
She was one who also.
Right.
I saw she had a post about there's another 80 acres that they own that they're going to have
a second development. 18 parcels in our area. That's Inyo Kern, Trona, Ridgecrest, and then way up there north of the pistachio, end of Brown Road. He owns a fair amount of Inyo Kern, folks. It's pretty interesting. He's been buying up stuff. He also is the one that built that solar property there in Inyo Kern. And I'm now wondering, gee, you put that out there as like some kind of cool community. Remember, everybody got a solicitation. You can join the community thing.
Not anymore.
No, that solar thing was with this data center in mind.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah.
And he's the same guy that's building the charging station that has been dragging on for 3 years at the Cornbeck McDonald's. That's his project too.
Interesting. Yeah. That'll be a museum next year.
Yeah. Well, what I'm waiting for is they've taken all the fencing and security away from that project. And machines are sitting there, and that's like they might as well have a target on high, rob me for copper. Hmm. And also the electrical. They have high voltage electrical stuff that's sitting there. I don't know that it's charged yet. There is no security around all of that electrical, incredible electrical stuff they have on site. Not a single fence.
Took down the fence on the west
side. So some crackhead is pretty. One of these days going to get an idea and say, "Hey, I'm going to go hit the Chargers." No, it's happening a lot of different places.
Yeah,
it happened.
Oh yeah, big time.
L.A. lighting.
Yeah. So that's what I think is the next step that's going to happen on that charging. But that's neither here nor there. But anyway, yeah, I would suggest you go to those Facebook sites because it's a lot
and
of
get, and get on the California Energy Commission. Okay, so that's the update for the data center.
So what's important to remember is right now, like literally this week, you need to submit your comments to the California Energy Commission because their decision will be made very soon.
Right.
And you also need to write not just Peters, all of the supervisors on the, and it's pretty, district1@kerncounty.gov, district2@kerncounty.gov, and tell them, "Hi, I'm a Ridgecrest voter. I don't like this project and why I don't like it." And you know.
That's a good point.
So what I see this as, I'm not trying to monopolize the whole thing here. So in 2011, they stuck us with those pistachio farms. Yeah, Mojave, you can build those. Thing sucked up 40 to 60% of the valley's water. And now we're getting rid of the pistachio farms. Okay, mm-hmm. That problem solved.
Yeah.
And now they're going to hit us with another pistachio farm thing, another project that's going to suck our water. Like, come on, don't repeat the Mojave pistachio mistake again.
So the SGMA and the Groundwater Authority was what drove the high cost of the acre fee, and that's what got the pistachio farms.
Right, and to my knowledge, from what Jennifer and Kitty have been saying, this guy Barker's gotten no buy-in or approval from the Groundwater Authority.
Yeah.
All he got was, "I have a plan that's going to hardly use any water. I'm going to cool this with magic, and I don't need any water, and Indian Wells Water District says they can give me the water that I need."
Yeah.
But the Groundwater Authority, I was talking to Scott Heyman the other day, he has not even approached them. Mm-hmm. How can you do something? Mm-hmm. They're part of the plan is they're going to drill their own well.
Oh, great. And,
they're going to drill a well.
People
are like, "Okay, you've got that in your plan, but you haven't even checked with the Groundwater Authority? Like, is that okay? Or is that legal?"
That's why they need to do a full CEQA.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody's drilling wells anymore without checking with the Groundwater Authority. Yeah. That's crazy.
And there was a lady that I talked to, and she's been doing a lot of deep diving also. For all I know, it could have been Slayton. I don't know. But she said it's going to take 1,400 square acres of solar panels to run the operation if they put in a solar field.
Do you think he's going to put in another solar field,
I
don't know.
But where, and where?
He owns.
Why would you do this in town is what I don't know.
Because he owns the land, and because it's right next to, it's easy access to existing utilities, and that's important for these data centers. And
there's fiber right there, too.
Yeah, and he thinks here's a little Fumbuck town, and they'd be happy to get this project, and I can ram this through in eastern Kern County, and nobody's going to be looking, and it's just a bunch of yokels, and I'm going to be a mover and shaker and get it done.
Talking about Barker? Well, Barker is the reason that Trona did not get fiber on T-17 488, okay? On the five mining communities. Trona and Searles Valley did not get it because he stood up and said, "Hey, this is going to interfere with my business." That's no different than anybody else that had a private business when the feds mandated communications, fiber communications across the nation in 96. And he stood up and I've stood next to the police station and called a cop, wait 2 hours for him, and he called back and said, "Well, where are you? I can't call you." So they couldn't call me right next to the police station on my cell phone.
I know.
I mean, It's terrible that Shona don't have communications. That would help them through all the troubles that they're having right now.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he stood in the way of that.
Well, if you get hung up out there and you don't have Verizon, that general store is very helpful. They'll let you use their phone.
I've never seen the 10 years I've lived here, I've never seen the community on to the right of Attila the Hun,
yeah,
and to the left of AOC all come together. I hate,
yes,
this. I don't want it.
It's been a lot,
but
of,
it's,
yeah,
going to take more than just bitching and complaining,
right,
because we're the tail of the dog out here in eastern Kern County.
I agree. So maybe the public lands roundtable should,
yeah,
generate a letter.
We've got to do some.
Do
we've
I
got
have
as
any
a community. We've got to be active. We've,
yeah,
got to get
you,
going.
You draft a letter.
Can, yeah, we do that here?
We have literally.
June 2nd, the data center will be on the agenda of the Ridgecrest City Council. Wednesday at what? 6? Is it 6:30?
6.
So when I looked at the
Wednesdays, they meet.
You said June 2nd.
June, yeah, whatever. The next thing is June.
So the California
2nd.
Energy Commission has an agenda that they publish as,
yes,
well.
Yes. Okay.
I
they're
see it
they're setting aside an hour to talk about it. Now the Ridgecrest City Council has no say on this project, but
they
can comment and they can put some pressure on the Board of Supervisors. So it's important that you show up and voice your... Heyman is on board. Kyle Blades, I understand, is pretty much on board. I don't know where
on
the others stand.
For it?
Gorman,
no, against it.
Skip is against it. We know that.
Okay, so... it's a public meeting. Go to the city council.
In fact, there's a meeting tonight, and that's where... He really is.
George is there?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Skip probably too.
And then Skip is there.
Yeah.
And I was invited, but I needed to be here.
Yeah, we
said
gotta make noise and gotta show up.
What you got, Steve?
On communications, my Sierra Amateur Radio Club, we're installing repeaters down in Trona to help extend our reach out for those people in that community down there during any kind of emergencies or whatever,
yeah,
like we did during the earthquake.
That's great.
So we're still working on that for several places to put up new repeaters that are self-supported by, power supplies with solar.
2-meter repeaters?
Yeah, 2-meter and 440.
Okay.
And we've got some of the gentlemen in my club are working on some equipment right now to get that ready to install and get it up and running.
Good.
There'll be a GMS RS out there also that we'll be able to put a repeater up.
Will we be able to get into it from up Animate Valley?
Yes, that's what we're working
on.
Oh, wow.
So we've
got
four different communications things that we're working on right now to try to get these things sold.
Great.
Just for FYI.
Wow.
That's
good.
Good job.
That's great.
Yeah.
Who's financing that?
Our club is doing it, but we're looking for donors and sponsors.
I got four towers.
Well, we might have to come up and have Phil come up there with us and load this tower.
I was gonna donate
so?
For the Desert Tortoise communications.
Yeah. Okay.
Also.
Tortoises
anyway, we're
communicating like that.
Yeah.
They can use the phone.
So you know, we back up communications here for the rides, the horse rides, and different things that go on in the events here. Those organizations have been donating money back into our pool for our communications work. So we support these things, these activities that go on, the car stuff and the horses and the whatever
they have.
We have lots of things going on. So we're getting some money and income coming out of these events that are helping us to sponsor most of this.
Oh, great.
Maybe you should do a presentation.
Yes.
I agree.
Yeah.
Just come to the
explain what it is and how it works.
Yeah,
I don't know anything
that
about that.
Most of that just went shoo.
Yeah, that'd be
cool.
Well,
I'll bring some more shoom with me when I come
back. Is it legal? All right. So we do
very
have
legal.
Transition habitat, if we can move on to that.
Maybe.
I know we got...
You talked about the Public Lands Roundtable doing a...
letter?
Making a letter to those to the thing. How do we tie that to public lands? How do we tie this thing on private to public lands so we can do that? And let's...
To the California Energy Commission?
We can write about whatever you want to write about.
The water depletion of the groundwater would affect.
And we were going to.
Air,
I mean, we can pick any topic we want, right? And we can generate air quality, sound, all these other reasons. There's lots of things that, and as members, we can either say that we agree, you know, that we're a part of it or not. And we can have a list of members that agree, and we can put that on the letter. And I mean, we can talk about format as we go along.
I would suggest that since basically the time is up, California Energy Commission is probably deciding now, this week as we speak. I would say, let's see what they say. Let's talk about this at our next meeting, and we could effectively draft something to go to the Board of Supervisors.
Yes.
Supervisors.
Okay, when I looked on the California Energy Commission site for their agenda, I did not see the Inyo Kern Data Center for June. Did you?
My understanding was that the decision was coming down in May, late May, by the end of May. Yeah,
wow.
That's why they were telling people, comment now.
Okay.
But that was my understanding. Because it basically, by the time we found out about it, it was almost a done deal.
Right.
That's why you're
right.
Like, well, how come there's no, how come we didn't know? Well, that was part of the plan, too.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Guy didn't do any PR about it because he's trying to sneak it in there.
Okay, sounds good. Mr. Transition.
In fact, that can be one of the points we put out there.
But nobody cares about that.
The public was not adequately notified.
I will defer to the video. I think that it'll say it better than I can. So
we turn one of the lights down.
Sam, we're gonna do the land trusted transition habitat.
Nope. That right there. Okay. There you go.
Install that side.
What's the title?
It's called Eco.
Eco.
Thank you. And what about that? That's the highest resolution.
Yes, Tim, on the left. Yeah.
I mean, this takes significantly longer, but it's worth it. Mm-hmm. It's no longer basic plastic filament. The idea is create a perfect fake tortoise. This is sort of what we're aiming for. This level of gloss, it's a little bit maddening to try to replicate that detail, but we're getting there, and we can booby trap them. I think there's a thing that runs in us, which is the critic of our thoughts. There's a little voice in there saying, that's absurd. And the little voice in me said, that's absurd. And I turned to the little voice and I said, shut up. I'm just gonna see where this leads, because I don't have anything else. A raven won't be able to tell the difference. I'm trying to keep tortoises from going extinct because they're being eaten by ravens. I almost feel like a SWAT team guy.
Kind of like a landmine.
Come in with the tool kit and start trying stuff.
That's cool.
Lasers, terrestrial rovers, drones, 3D printed fake tortoises. I'm having a hell of a good time. These have a spacer built in on both sides. Gotcha. So I hold it. Exactly. You thought this through? For once. Back the other way. Conservation biology can be really depressing. You're the scientist, the objective observer. You don't get involved. You're just taking notes on the catastrophe. And I came to a breaking moment for me. It's just like, what the hell is all this knowledge good for if I don't do something? In love with reptiles. Little dragons, look at it on the sand. It's just incredible.
That's perfect.
This shell is beautiful. That's a 275 million year old pattern. Looking back on my entire youth, time in the classroom, it's sort of black and white, it's kind of a Wizard of Oz thing. But in the field, everything came alive. Mojave Desert, hot, dry, and nasty. And yet, in certain places, wonder of tadpoles. I'm kind of in the middle of this wildlife documentary that's unfolding in real time. The bobcat's staring at me. Hey, kitty.
Thank you.
right as I got my master's, a project was announced by the local BLM office in Riverside that this woman, Dr. Christine Berry, was starting a desert tortoise population monitoring project.
I was the one that set up the studies and laid out these plots so that they could be revisited over time. Tim Shields, he would make himself a long gown, but he had no shorts on underneath. He was one of the field people, and he was one of the best. And he's above even the best in finding babies.
They genuinely have a joie de vivre. They live life passionately. They're thought of as gentle, slow-moving, kind of dumb creatures. They're not dumb. They can't be dumb and make it where they make it.
The desert tortoise has been in trouble since the 1930s.
So we'll do north-south. That'll establish the two corners, and then we'll just up and down like that.
We have loss of habitat, the deaths of animals from roads and vehicles, disease. And then, of course, there's climate change.
Every time we came back, every 4 years, there was a 50% decline in numbers. Bottomed out at 35 tortoises, something like that. 40 tortoises. It was terrible. Oh, buddy. It's not so good. It was really hard as a human being who also loved these creatures to go out and spend months just picking up dead tortoises. 95. I could no longer be passive about this and simply watch the end of the show. I focused on the raven as an idea simply because it seemed like a manageable threat. As human population has risen in the desert, there's a fairly simple mathematical relationship. More humans equals more ravens equals fewer tortoises. There aren't that many tortoises left. They're like caviar for ravens. It's another day in Raven Town. With a group of about five ravens right here.
Is there one right there? Oh, there's a whole shitload.
And here comes another one in here. These ravens will know which restaurants are sloppy about closing the dumpster, which dumpsters are more likely to be opened up by the wind, all of these sorts of patterns. So you're dealing with a genius animal that is also an omnivore. I'm starting to see him come in this alley right in front of us. The lowest count I've ever had, I think, is 1,500. So what we've done is we've imported ravens right through excellent tortoise habitat. Here's a good one. This is very typical, which is punching through the plastron, which is the underside of the shell, to remove the internal organs and maybe eat the meat or not. It takes them 5 to 10 years minimum to get to the point where they can resist the attack of a raven. But during that time, the odds of them avoiding detection by a raven are functionally zero. All right, Frank. It's not ready for prime time, but it certainly is ready for testing. The antithesis of the depressed conservation biologist is the engineer, because now they have all these new tools and they're going, we can do anything. Savvy technologists are expensive, frankly. And I meet this crazy kid, Frank Gersio, a high school kid who turns out to be kind of a genius.
You know, you grow up, you watch James Bond, and you watch all these tech guys build tools for spies, and now I'm Q. This is our prototype laser. We call this the Blastalux. For whatever reason, ravens hate green. Someone may as well have started a bar fight amongst them. Many times they disperse and don't come back.
Ravens are arguably the most intelligent birds on the planet, and arguably more intelligent than we are in certain respects. They operate on a lot of the same circuits that we do in terms of our opportunism, our ability to innovate. We just have to change the cost-benefit ratio inside the bird's head so that it chooses somewhere different, away from tortoise habitat. We can do it without killing the birds. The way I think about it is a bird educated by Hardshell Labs is more valuable than a dead bird, because they are very social creatures and because they watch each other. There, you got them. There they went. It's so clear when you hit them. And then there's the social effect of like, oh, everybody's panicking, I better panic too. It's so wonderful. The laser worked really well. That fired me up.
I parked here and I just had this feeling going in, there's a raven nest in here.
Welcome to the Millennial Starter Home, boys.
Yes. It's a bit of a fixer-upper.
There it is. Raven nest. This is that boroscope we were talking about. Raise it somewhat. There. And there's the nest cup right there. Remote egg oiling is a way of changing their numbers. Their babies don't hatch. They don't have as many babies. Already we have evidence that they're abandoning those areas.
This will be so thrilling if there are a good number of eggs in there. I've been wanting this nest for a long time.
Yep, 4 eggs.
Okay. The din of the 21st century. What a setting to oil eggs.
Can we alter their numbers? Can we alter their distribution? Or can we alter their behavior? And they'll probably all come into play. The driving force behind this project is aversive training. The raven comes in, flips it over. For whatever reason, artificial grape flavoring drives birds crazy, including ravens.
On the inside, we have a bladder, which acts like a pepper spray. That means it's going to arm. That one's primed and ready to go. So if you turned it on right now and waited to 3, it would explode all over us.
If a certain number of ravens have the bad experience with the technotord, we should see a reduction in the frequency of attacks.
Don't touch it, because it'll go on.
The idea is just to make the haunted landscape where there's just no relief from the surprises, and all the surprises are bad.
Lethal tortoise.
Do you get this?
I don't get this.
This was the guy who just was like, would not give it up. You know, maybe they're a mated pair, and she's just going, Charlie, you're a fool. It ain't worth it. I'm going off to the McDonald's dumpster. We're sitting in a space that 3 months from now is going to have 100 printers. Filament production lines, resin printers, CNC machines, laser cutters, anything and everything that can be used to solve the problem. Do these things work? Can we do this? We already think we're having a positive effect. The attack rate is significantly lower, that you can pick it up in the data. Very cautious optimism is how I feel. After a lifetime of observing this thing that was falling apart, the work we're doing has injected an element of hope. The promised land, my baby tortoises, may you grow and prosper.
My heart is beating fast for this little tortoise. I love finding little turtles.
All of these tortoises have huge growth rates this year. It's been a very productive year. I like humans well enough, but we have flaws. And I don't learn as much from other human beings as I do from tortoises. They're just my best teachers. The desert tortoise is one example of species that are suffering from the way humans are doing business in the world. But this is a global phenomenon. We have thrown
the world ecosystem so far out of whack that if we don't put our hands on those ecological levers, letting nature take its course is going to be really bad for us as well. Look at that face. He's slightly awake, but very sleepy. If we don't want a really lonely planet that's just us and ravens and rats and cockroaches, we have a whole ton of work to do. Oh, it's going to be great. It's just spectacular. Hi, cows. With all these birds eating the grain. I have this little human life. I'm just one of these human sparks. We're all just like, we're gone like that. This seems like a reasonable way to spend my golden years. Oh, 3, 2, 1. Ta-da! People started building cathedrals knowing this thing isn't going to be done for 200 years. I'm laying bricks here. I'm never going to see the finished product. I'm going to be recycled into creosote bush by the time any of this pays off. So I kind of feel like one of those cathedral builders. It's just like, lay some bricks. But it's all right being a bricklayer.
Take credit for the quality of the video. I can only take credit for funding the project. So wow. He's a bricklayer. I'm the paper pusher.
Money well spent. That's excellent.
I still think you need a disclaimer. Say, yeah. Get some tissue before you watch this.
You will be moved. That's good. Good to hear.
I like want to see the hour version now.
Hour version is Tim giving a more updated version. He dives into the tracking a little bit more, and it's more the scientific data.
Yeah.
Less of the inspiration, but still, he always speaks very hopefully. So that's
good. That really helps.
That was good. I have a quick question, because one of the things we heard with this whole tortoise thing, I love tortoises.
What's he doing?
But we heard that ravens are also a protected species.
They are, yes. True? Yes, they're protected by the Migratory Bird or Migratory Species Act. So that's why we can't just go out there and shoot them. So Tim has to get really special permits to do the egg oiling and this hazing.
Well, that's what hit me with the egg oiling.
Yeah.
Is that okay if they're protected?
Well, he has to get special permits from the Fish and Wildlife Service. So he goes to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and they have to go through a permitting process for it. So basically to make sure that they don't decrease the population below an unhealthy level. Because as Tim mentioned, the ravens are fine. They're great animals, but we're bringing them out to an area in numbers where it's not good for the ecosystem. So, yeah, it's all about just trying to find that humane way to manage them. Yeah. All that work is taking place on THC land out in the Fremont Kramer area, around Kramer Junction and Barstow, Victorville, the high desert.
That's cool. There. Yeah. On the preserve too, the Desert Tortoise Preserve?
I don't think they're doing any work over there just yet. But the whole point of this grant is to like share these new technologies with other land managers. So hopefully, once we have some data to back up what we're doing, they can then take it and run with it.
Yeah. He comes sometimes. I've seen him give a talk and show his little toys.
Yeah,
at
pretty cool.
The Desert Tortoise Center. He comes and talks sometimes.
Yeah, obviously Christine Berry and that Desert Tortoise Reserve was a big influence on him.
Yeah, she's astounding.
On the topic of just harassing ravens, you know, the land dump would be a great place.
Yeah.
The dump that we have in Bear County.
The thing is it's so financially responsible for these people to do it. The dairies, they're losing product and they're losing money because of the ravens. So if they can invest in this like security system with a little laser. And since this video, we've actually automated these things.
Yeah.
So there's just a machine there. I can log on my laptop, check the dairy, and fire the laser from here in Ridgecrest.
Wow.
So we can do like security across all these locations.
Really?
So
how long before
the birds just say, "Oh, that's just a laser"?
They don't acclimate. We have no. We have seen no evidence of them acclimating
really
at all.
They don't.
Yeah, they run every time.
I would like to see that happen at the dump.
A few years now, at least 3 or 4 years.
I got a green laser gun. What's the legality?
Yeah,
it's a good question.
Below 6,000 feet, I believe, in this area.
I want some green lasers around the dumpsters.
Can I aim it at an airplane?
Caesars.
Can I aim it at a bird?
You can't have flaming ravens coming out of the sky. Well, there it all got
its tail. But the astronomical, the star class, China Lake Astronomical Society, they use green lasers for pointing in their star events.
We do?
Yeah, they're great for astronomy.
Yeah, they are.
They'll go pretty far up in the sky.
Oh, yeah.
Are we doing something illegal if we're using those out in the
dump?
El Paso?
I don't think so.
Stars?
I think it's as long as you're not shining it towards a plane or in somebody's eyes or something, I think it's okay. But,
oh, it's a Navy airplane.
I don't know exactly. I don't know like what the wattage is. If their particular laser might be a little bit like heavier duty.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious, yeah.
The ravens also destroy Joshua tree blooms. They like to just climb up there and sit on there and pick them off. They just pick the blooms off.
I hadn't even thought about that impact.
But like I said, I thought they made a really good point on that. Like ravens, like rats, right? Like they've always existed, but human behavior has given them a immense amount of habitat and food to eat.
Sure.
And now they're going after these other animals.
So, and you know what? I wonder if the reduction in OHV activity is going to result in less ravens as well.
Yes.
Because they follow the riders and the campers. That's why they're out there, is because they're being subsidized.
Trash.
Yeah. It'll be interesting.
Somebody's going to just bear with me, okay? Because I come here for perspectives, different perspectives. In my brain, if there's so many more ravens, why don't we just take them off that list and take care of them? Like hunting, like they do everything else. Why? We'd save a whole lot of money.
The Migratory Bird Act is a congressionally passed act, and it's any migratory bird. So obviously ravens migrate just like almost every other bird that flies, right? So they have certain protections. But you can tell in this case, CDFW values the endangered tortoise more than the ravens. You're willing to oil the eggs, but actually going out there and killing them. It also creates other problems, right? Because then you have more waste on the landscape, right? For maybe other animals to eat, disease to spread, that sort of thing. Well, the bullets become problems. The condor is a good example of that. So, you know, cutting it off before they're born, right, with a benign treatment, right, would be egg oiling. We participate in this with the DTRNA. The DTPC, I love the work that Sam, I'm glad you guys are involved in it as well, are doing. Because, you know, the negative impacts are focal, like they're localized, and they don't cause these collateral damages, right?
Mm-hmm. Something that I heard years ago, and I don't know if it was at this table or where, but that there's the Mexican raven, and it's different than our desert raven, and they do migratory fly up here. And so you can't shoot our native ravens, because some of those could be the endangered raven, and they've got like some white under feathers, and that's the only way you can tell the difference.
I don't think they knew that in 1938. And frankly, I don't think the ravens are all that migratory. You go over to Sam's house at night, and you'll see they migratory around the food source and Ridgecrest.
What are you feeding them, Sam?
And everything.
Everybody's dumb.
I don't know why somebody hasn't made a motion to change Congress.
No, they have a circuit. They take it in Ridgecrest.
Yeah.
And you can see them. They first go to the water station.
So one at a time, please. One at a time. I know it's hard to do, but because I got something to say too. Well, at our last meeting, and this might not be your popular thing, but let's talk about WMO 3.0, and let's talk about and I brought this up at our last meeting, how we have a habitat that, because of the habitat, Department of Fish and Wildlife has stated that the desert tortoise. This land is set aside because its habitat is conducive to have a desert tortoise. There is no ground truth that the desert tortoise inhabit this area, okay? I know that there's studies been done in the past, very small amount. It's human intensive, you know, to consider going out and counting burrows. It was when this act was put forth, when this land was set aside, when the rules were put into place, okay, and then now WEMO 3.0, from what I understand, said that there was not proper science done, that science had changed.
And it wasn't considered.
So here's a top on the topic of counting burrows. I asked at the last meeting whether LIDAR had been utilized in this manner, and I didn't know. I was just wondering. And guess what? It has been. If you do a search online, Nevada has used it. They have the resolution down to centimeters. They can identify burrows, where all the burrows are, whether they're inhabited or not. We don't know. But wouldn't it be interesting that if the off-road community or whoever was interested in knowing whether or not there's tortoises out there utilize that kind of technology?
I think you bring up a good point. It's not only the WEMO that needs to be redone, but the biological opinion from the Fish and Wildlife Service, right?
Sure.
So it's the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that ultimately establishes where the critical habitat
is. Of course.
And we have to abide by their decision when it comes to that.
Mm.
So if there's any reconsideration of that critical habitat, it would be on their part. And this is information that they should definitely have so they can have a full suite of options available. To
another letter from PLRT.
And any of them we can find, we move, relocate them to where they want to put the data center.
You know, yeah. I was like, I do that.
I will second that.
Two birds with one stone.
And if there's some kind of rare buckwheat plant out there, then let's go plant it right now.
I've seen this approach undertaken in the past. It hasn't worked out so well.
Water it.
Let's water it.
What do you got, Danielle?
Some trash around this solar.
I got a real good flint napper, too.
It has nothing to do with the tortoises at this it directly. I just wanted to make an announcement. Sam is created a public lands roundtable, and it's a new kind of a newer group. I'm newer to it. We're having our first major event on National Public Lands Day, September 26th of this year, and it's all in the planning and the works at this time.
That's good.
But if anybody's interested in wearing a t-shirt, participating, any details, you can reach out to Sam or myself, and I think we're having a website up, and we'll have more details, but I just wanted to know if anybody wants to mark their calendars. It's going to be
September 26th.
National Public Lands.
Thank you. It's National Public Lands. We're going to have something here in Ridgecrest.
Yes.
So tell us more about that.
We will. We'll get more.
Oh, okay.
More
very good. September 26th.
That was our introduction.
Write that down. And on the topic of, once again, I hate to hammer too hard, but you know, you guys are setting up a new group, but we don't have that listed on our website. We have things like, you know, Multiple Use Coalition, which doesn't exist anymore, which somebody's names are on that aren't even alive anymore. So we really need to go.
I'm still alive.
Ron.
Mary's still alive.
Ron Schiller. Ron Schiller. Okay. Is who I was alluding to, and specifically. And we need to look at our, we need to update our list of members.
Well,
please.
You can contact us. It's Public Land Matters.
And where are you based out of?
Sam.
Sam's office.
Mobile.
And Sam communicates with us like you did last year for public, and then we put that out as, you know, we'll show up with a couple people if we can from the BLM. That's what we're kind of down to. But we can get the word out because we say we're doing these events in partnership. We're happy to continue doing that with your group. And if there's other public lands, they don't have to be on Public Lands Day either. Typically in this office, we don't do events on Public Lands Day because it's too hot. Right? So we'll do something.
But we're going to do it on September 26th because it's National Public Lands Day.
Oh, I love that.
And it's the anniversary of FLPMA, October 21st.
FLPMA.
We'll usually do something closer to that. That's more organized by our office.
My very first letter.
you know, we're down to not a lot of staff, so this is a great example of where this organization, the groups you all represent, we need you to put those events together, and we'll show up with, you know, flash the badges and have some swag for folks, you know, with a couple law enforcement officers or rec folks and everything. We're happy to support those types of things on BLM land, but we really need you all to do the work, get people out there and send the emails and all that sort of stuff.
Why we're here.
Absolutely, and I love it. Sam's a great example of just how that should work.
So is there anything else what you
got
to do?
I got one more thing to add to that conversation with you, Phil. Okay. You've mentioned the grants and the staffing and everything. Do you have a list of volunteer opportunities?
Not really a list. As things come in, we've got a handful of sort of groups that have demonstrated that, you know, it's kind of a give and take. Mark's group with Quail Forever is a great example. They focus on guzzlers, right? And then the cabin group, we're starting to get things moving there. Now we have an archaeologist in our office, so we have someone who can specialize and focus on that. We work heavily with the PCTA and with the Sierra Club on invasives. And those are our primary groups that we do volunteer activities with. We're always interested in others, but we really need you to come to us with your ideas and your people, and then we can put together a volunteer agreement and then make sure that there's that give and take, because we have reporting requirements and that sort of stuff. The DTRNA is another great example of a very key organization. So we've got a handful of those groups that have a focused a sort of topic or issue that they do, and then we've got maybe a couple staff that focus on those issues as well, and it's a good marriage that I think works. So we don't have a lot of capacity to do that, but we do have a handful that are in different phases and different degrees of success, and I see them all going in the right direction, so that's really positive.
Well, cool. You offered me your card, so I'm going to take that at the end,
sure,
and I'll reach out there.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate your time. I know you have to drive.
So before we go too far, I'd like to thank Sam and Transition Habitat for such a great presentation. Thanks for showing up. Thank you, Will, for making this happen. Also,
thank you.
Good catch. And thanks for Ransburg Store for showing up as well. And unless anybody has any further questions?
I have a funny story about ravens.
Funny story?
Yeah. I used to work at Baskin Robbins. I was the cake decorator. And Yum Yum Donuts was on the other side. And they threw their day-old donuts in the trash. So I came in to work about 7 o'clock one morning. And I pull into the driveway. And I look over and there are donuts, different flavors, lined up on the wall. So the ravens would come in. And they will pick it, because they're the ones that picked them out, and they would take a flavor up on the roof, eat on it for a while, bring it back, and trade it for a new flavor. So, I mean, they're smart birds.
Wow.
I mean, that's, you know,
smart.
And to bring it back to share with
donuts.
The
other ravens.
We need to train them.
So I had a raven as a pet for 3 weeks.
Yeah,
really.
Just because I'm interested in this, and they're filthy and they're freaking smart.
Yeah. So my raven story is that we have chickens, and most of our coops are covered, and so there's not a problem with them taking the eggs. But my wife, when the egg is cracked, we put it outside, right? The ravens would spot and bring it, put it down. Well, then they bring golf balls. So I've been finding golf balls in the yard. And apparently I got a neighbor who has kids golf balls, and they bring these golf balls in and drop them. They take our eggs, or cracked eggs, and they bring back golf balls. So,
that's weird.
But growing up in Adelanto a long time ago, I mean, there were a lot of tortoises. There really and truly were. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of everything else, too, but not ravens. There was a lot of, you know, the people there, the ravens, for whatever reason, hadn't figured it out. But you did not find tortoise shells broken by ravens. Very few humans would shoot them, tortoise, but you would find that. But coyotes would chew them, you know, that's true too. Small baby tortoises would, you could tell that they had been killed. But you didn't find any like you do today. You find adult tortoise shells broken by ravens. And I've heard that they use tools. Ravens have learned how to use rocks in their beaks, drop them, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, They've learned.
Yeah, we are the invasive species.
Well, okay, let's go. Let's take care of that problem.
But you know, when I moved here in 79, there were always, tortoises all the time. And they'd be like crossing the roads, crossing Garlock Road.
A little rain.
You'd stop.
You'd be out.
Get them across the road, you know.
Yeah, still catch them.
And you just got a radio.
You never see them now.
No, it's terrible.
So that's it, folks. I don't have anything else.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming in. Steve has some.
Would you announce to the group what the YouTube thing was? It should be
Echo-Hack.
Yeah,
EcoHack.
EcoHack, I'm sorry.
If you want to look that
up.
Oh, okay.
Look it up.
Okay. No, I'll send the link maybe to
Charlie.
Charlie, yeah. Just go to plrt.info and there's contact.
So we have a website also.
Yeah, we also have